They all stepped carefully down the embankment and onto the cracked pavement of the car park. Then they took in their surroundings.
"Ripley Heights," said Eve, with an element of surprise in her voice. "I haven't been here since I was a kid."
"You know this place?" Nick asked her.
"Yes, a kiddie park. You take the cable car up to the top and there's a petting zoo and some rides. It's all pretty lame, but as a kid I loved it. Surprised the place is still going. It was falling apart 10 years ago."
"What's this building up ahead?" She let out a giggle.
"It's the Rainforest Cafe. I remember it like it was yesterday. My dad used to drag us out the car and then we'd all have to go to the toilet while he paid for our tickets. Then he would make us all wait inside the cafe while he and Mum had a coffee before we could ride to the top."
Me and my sister hated that part. Kind of miss it now, though.
"My dad passed away a few years later. Heart disease."
She let out a wistful sigh, and Nick could tell she was thinking about her family and whether or not they were okay. "Come on," he told her, trying to keep her mind from exploring dark alleyways. "Let's go and take a look around before Dave takes over." She nodded and the two of them got going. Up ahead, the long single-story building was indeed called the Rainforest Cafe. The wooden sign had become weathered and frayed, but it only made it more befitting to its jungle theme. Through the grimy glass windows, Nick could see 24 fiberboard tables surrounded by plastic chairs. At one end was a fast food counter, with pictures of burgers and hot dogs above it. "There's no way for us to get inside," he said, "and there's no one in there to let us in." "We'll break in," said Dave. It felt wrong to suggest such an act, but Nick couldn't find a reason to object. With all the damage and destruction they had witnessed on the road, adding a little more seemed like spitting in the ocean.
"What can we use?" asked Jan as he looked around. "The whole place is pretty barren."
"Does anybody have anything hard on them?" Dave asked the group.
Dash grabbed at his crotch.
"I do, but I don't think you can break glass with it."
"That's gross," said Cassie, holding a hand to her mouth.
Dash sucked at his teeth.
"Oh, come on, girl, quit playing coy. A fine piece of arse like you must have had a fair share of crotch rockets. If not, then allow me to be the first."
Jan put one of his meaty palms against his fellow prisoner's chest. "Take a cold shower," he said, "or someone will cut it off." Dash just snickered.
"Okay," said Dave, clapping his hands together to get everyone's full attention. "Everybody, spread out and check the sides of the building. We're looking for a brick or anything else that could help us get inside."
Everybody set off at once. Nick went to check over by the cable car station with Pauline, who seemed like she could use the company. She looked exhausted. "How are you holding up?" he asked her.
"Well, the only thing keeping me going is the chance that there might be food inside this building. I'm hoping something to eat might stop my stomach from churning so much."
Nick hadn't considered the possibility of food, but he realized that he, too, was famished. "I guess we could all do with an energy boost," he said. "What's your favourite food?" Pauline looked at him.
"Really?"
"Yeah, why not? Just making conversation. I can't stand silence. It's so tense between us all that I feel like somebody might spontaneously combust."
Her lips cracked a smile for the first time since he had met her. It made her look younger.
"I know what you mean," she said.
"Well, I don't really have a favourite meal, but if I did, I could guarantee you I wouldn't find it inside that little burger bar. I like French food. Cheese and red wine. Delicious."
Nick pulled a face. "No, thank you. I like a big hunk of meat. Nice fat steak or a pork chop. Caveman style." He suddenly thought about the steak he was supposed to have eaten the night before and felt his stomach roil. The sight of that bloody hunk of meat between his son's teeth.
"Stay focused, Nick. No time to..."
Something caught his eye.
"Hey! What's that over there?"
He pointed to a pile of debris up ahead. It seemed like it might have what they needed. He and Pauline hurried over and began sifting through the mess.
"They do a really bad job of looking after this place," Pauline commented as she kicked aside some rotten cardboard.
"I guess this place is making a loss. Most places are nowadays."
Nick bent over and moved aside an old wooden pallet rotten to its core. Spiders and woodlice scurried out from underneath it. Gross. But amongst all the insects was exactly what they needed. Nick picked up the grubby rock and examined it. It was heavy in his hand, but light enough to throw with a decent amount of force. "Perfect," he said, holding it out so that Pauline could see it. She nodded and agreed that it was perfect, so they headed back round to the car park. They caught up with Jan and the other two prisoners outside the cafe's front entrance. Nick held the rock out to them and smiled.
Perfect, said Jan. Give it here, and I'll get us in.
Nick handed over the rock, and they all stepped away from the windows. Jan wound up like a pitcher and let the rock fly like a baseball. One of the window panes shattered instantly, showering the ground with shards of glass. They all cringed as the alarm went off. It was loud. Really loud. Dave and the others came sprinting from around the side of the building.
You stupid shits! He shouted. Who told you to do that? You should have waited until I gave the okay!
Nick bristled and clenched his jaw.
Piss off, Dave!
Dave fronted up to him.
Piss off? Who the hell do you think you are? You'd still be on the side of the road if it weren't for me!
We don't have time for this, Pauline shouted. We have to get that alarm off before any infected people hear us.
She's right, said Jan. Back in one of the towns we passed through, I saw a whole bunch of infected people head right for a church when its bell started ringing. Attracted every one of them in the area. We need to cut the noise right now, or they'll be here.
Don't worry, I got this, said Dash, leaping up onto the ledge of the broken window and disappearing into the shadows inside.
Everyone else stood around anxiously, eyeing the tree line. They were all dreading the sudden rush of infected people hammering over the concrete towards them. The alarm was loud enough to travel for miles.
This is not good, said Cassie.
Carl put an arm around her.
It'll be okay.
Dave stomped back and forth furiously, clenching his fists and heaving his gut in and out. Jan and Renee were the calmest, standing beside the broken window and staring patiently inside. Margaret, Eve, and Pauline stood beside Nick, huddled together as if merely doing so was enough to keep them safe. He patted Margaret on her back and gave her a reassuring smile.
What a racket, she muttered.
The shrill call of the alarm set all of their nerves on edge. Everyone was visibly close to panic. If what Jan had said was right, it could spell big trouble for them all.
We're sitting ducks.
The alarm stopped suddenly. There was total silence. A moment later, Dash appeared at the broken window. He held what looked like a frying pan in his hand. He used the hard metal edge to knock loose the remaining shards of glass from the frame, making it safe to climb through.
Come on in, gangsters, he said.
Something tells me you've done this before, Nick commented.
I don't know what you mean, Blood. I'm just a man that knows a few things.
Well, you did good, said Dave. Is there any way you can get the doors open as well?
Dash shook his head.
No can do. Any keys would be in the safe, and my skills don't go that far.
Okay, said Dave. Then pass us out one of those plastic chairs to help us climb over.
Dash disappeared back inside and then reappeared at the window with a chair. He passed it out to Dave, who set it down on the pavement.
Okay, Dave said. Ladies first.
They sent in Margaret to start, Nick helping her up and then Dash helping her down onto his shoulder from the other side. Eve was next and hopped through relatively easily, followed by Pauline, who stumbled and half fell inside. Cassie went next and then the men followed. Nick went in after Carl, who went in after Renee. Dave and Jan came in last. Jan was so tall he could have stepped over without the chair. Inside, the room was shadowy but not completely dark. The chairs and tables were neatly stacked, and the floors were mostly clear. The cafe was still operational by the looks of things.
Wonder why there's no one here, said Pauline.
Makes sense, said Nick, when you think about the time this all started. My wife and son were sick before dawn. I'd imagine some people probably took longer, but it's safe to assume that the situation was pretty bad everywhere by 8 a.m. This cafe probably doesn't open until 9 or 10, so the staff wouldn't have even started their commute by the time the shit hit the fan. I think most people were either getting up for work or already on their way when they got attacked. We all saw the roads this morning. It happened all at once. It caught everybody by surprise.
I think we can all count ourselves pretty lucky, said Dave. All of us managed to escape the situation before it got real bad.
We owe you big time, Carl said to Dave. I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't picked me up.
Dave puffed up his chest proudly.
Don't mention it.
Do you think the power is still on? Cassie asked.
Nick shrugged his shoulders. No reason it shouldn't be. He headed over to the wall and followed it along until he reached a door reading, Staff Only. Beside it was a little incision in the wall. He sighed. The lights are operated by one of those little fish key thingies.
Anybody got a hair clip? Jan asked.
Pauline pulled one from her hair and handed it over. Jan took it to where Nick was standing and jammed it into the small hole. He fiddled the piece of plastic-coated steel for a few seconds and then an audible click. The lights came on and everybody cheered.
Excellent, said Dave. Now, let's hunt down a phone.
There's one through that door, said Dash. It leads to an office and a staff room. I saw it when I broke in.
Excellent, Dave said again. I'll go see if I can reach somebody.
Nick plonked himself down at one of the small restaurant tables and slouched forward on his elbows. His left arm cried out in pain from his wounds, but it still felt good to be sitting indoors again. He had been beginning to feel like a nomad, trekking through the woods without direction. It was good to finally stop for a while and take stock of things. Pauline took a seat next to him.
Hope that alarm didn't bring any attention to us. I don't think I can face being attacked again.
Nick looked out across the empty car park. It doesn't seem to have brought anything. We should be okay. We might even be able to stay here until the authorities get a handle of things.
You think they will?
Nick wanted to be optimistic, but couldn't find the energy to kid himself.
I don't know, he admitted. I don't know what there is for them to get a handle on. If those sick people can't be helped, well, let's just say that will be a lot of funerals to arrange. I have some of my own to attend to as soon as this is over.
Pauline had an expression that suggested she was trying to hold back tears.
How could something like this happen, Nick?
Aliens, said Carl from nearby. Nick frowned.
Huh? Maybe it was aliens, Carl repeated. As good a theory as any. I read once on the internet that they have this big hole in the desert in America that's filled with all sorts of things we don't know about. I bet it was aliens.
Nick raised an eyebrow. Think I prefer to hear something else as a reason. Carl shrugged.
Terrorists, laboratory accident, evil corporations, Mother Nature fighting back, meteor, God punishing us.
Are all those film plots or something? Asked Pauline.
Maybe, said Carl.
My point is that something this big doesn't just happen. It's an insane scenario, which means it makes sense that there's an insane cause for it all.
I guess you're right, said Nick, but I'd rather keep my feet on the ground and my mind focused for now.
I know what you mean, Carl nodded sagely.
Then he looked at Pauline.
You fancy helping me get the grills on, darling? I think everyone could do with some grub. The power's on, so there should be no reason we can't get some chow on the go.
Pauline shot up from her seat.
Sounds good to me. I'm bleeding starving.
Nick laughed and watched them wander off to the kitchens. Then his smile faded as he remembered all of the reasons not to be happy.
How can I even manage to smile with what's happened? I should be ashamed of myself. My son died only hours ago.
The staff door flew open with what sounded like a kick, and Dave re-entered the restaurant. He was shaking his head and seemed pretty pissed off.
What is it? Nick asked him. The phones are completely dead. There's not even a dial tone.
Nick sighed and rubbed at his forehead.
I'm beginning to think no help's coming.
Nonsense! The police must be dealing with this. Probably the army, too. They'll come eventually.
Nick considered it. It was a possibility, but really they had no way of knowing. Maybe they will come, but what do you plan on doing in the meantime?
Or we can stay here. Keep trying the phones.
All right. Then we should get that broken window covered up, or we're all going to freeze tonight. Dave nodded. His jowls wobbled as he did so.
Good idea. Please get right on that.
Then he turned around on his heel and marched away. Nick snapped off a petulant salute.
Right away, sir!
Then he got up and headed through the staff-only door to begin his search for materials. The tiled hallway inside smelt faintly of lemony bleach. The chemical odour tickled his sinuses. On his right was an open door leading to a small staff room and sofa. Straight ahead was a door marked Manager's Office. Nick entered the room and looked around the interior. An old computer perched on a desk and a heavy safe lay underneath it on the worn blue carpet. Beside the computer's monitor was a telephone. Nick picked it up and held it to his ear. Like Dave had said, the line was completely dead. He didn't know why he'd even felt the need to double-check, but it was nice to know that the man hadn't been lying about it.
I don't trust that guy. He's got an ego the size of the bus he was driving.
Nick looked around himself for something useful to block up the restaurant's window with, and was glad when he was able to find something right away. On the wall was a large corkboard, more than big enough to cover the broken window. He pulled at it and it came away from the plasterboard easily. It was only held in place by a couple of loose nails. He walked sideways with the corkboard, down the corridor, and took it back out onto the restaurant floor. 2 minutes later, with the help of Jan and Renee, Nick had gotten it positioned over the broken window and held it in place by a couple of stacked tables shoved up against it.
That should keep the wind out, said Jan.
Hopefully, Nick said. Isn't the wind that worries me, though? Jan patted him on the back with a meaty slap.
Long as we lay low, I can't see any danger.
Long as nobody makes the mistake of sneezing or coughing, else you and Dave will probably smash their skull in. Jan glared at Nick. He suddenly felt threatened by the larger man.
Listen, brother, said Jan. I may be a lot of things, but I'm not a killer. That lady was already dead. She's probably wandering around those woods right now, out of her mind. There was nothing any of us could do for her. Dave was trying to do her a favor.
It's funny, because it seemed to me like she was begging for her life.
Jan shoved Nick aside.
You seem to be forgetting that in the end I came around to your way of thinking. Maybe next time I'll just go with my gut, whether you like it or not.
Jan walked away and Nick sighed. It was true Jan had not been the one who had tried to kill Catherine, but he was the one who had suggested it. The man was a criminal when all was said and done.
None of us should forget that. We don't know how dangerous these prisoners are. They were locked up like animals before any of this started.
One thing was for sure. Nick's main concern was not about the wind getting in. It turned out that Carl and Pauline were able to rustle up quite the feast. A large freezer in the kitchen contained burger patties, hot dogs, mini pizzas, and bags of frying chips. With a little bit of fiddling, they had managed to switch on the fat fryers and griddles, and within 1 hour everyone was sitting in the restaurant eating more than they needed. Nick felt bloated and overly full already, but found that the act of eating helped take away some of his stresses, allowed him to blank his mind of its troubles while he focused on a basic human need.
Guess there's a reason they call it comfort eating.
At his table were Eve, Margaret and Pauline. Carl, Cassie and Renee sat at another table, while Jan, Dash and Dave sat at a third. The women at Nick's table all looked very satisfied as they finished off their French fries. They all had a variety of soft drinks in front of them, which they slurped readily, except for Margaret, who was drinking piping hot tea.
Nothing seems as bad after a good brew, said Margaret. It can get you through anything.
Eve wiped her mouth with a napkin.
I bet you've seen some stuff in your lifetime, Margaret.
I have at that.
Not anything like this, though. This is hell on earth. A right bloody shambles.
You think it's the same everywhere? Pauline asked, rubbing at her eyes and smudging her makeup.
I do, said Margaret. There seems to be something very deliberate about all this. How could things degenerate so completely without being planned? Should we believe that there weren't any doctors who picked this up early? That the government had no warning at all? If that's the case, then this is either the work of very powerful enemies or a very angry god. And neither of those would release something this destructive solely on a little island like Britain.
So you think it's happening in other countries too? Nick asked. He held a cardboard beer mat in his hands and was absent-mindedly peeling away the label.
Margaret nodded. I'd say this is happening at least in the Western world. If it was terrorists, for example, they would have far more to gain by releasing this in America or mainland Europe. It would be a waste to focus it only on us. The spread of the disease would halt at our natural barriers, the coastline. Maybe someone just wants to set an example, hold the world to ransom by showing what they can do. Maybe we're being used to send a message.
The old lady shrugged.
Only time will tell.
Nick nodded his head slowly as he thought about it.
I wonder how much time any of us have left.
While Nick's mind was wandering, Dave decided to stand up and address the group. He cleared his throat and began.
Perhaps now would be a good opportunity for us to get some rest. See what tomorrow brings.
Nobody argued, so he continued.
We can turn off the lights and bed down wherever we can. Margaret, you can have the sofa in the staff room.
Oh, thank you.
Then we can hold a meeting in the morning to figure out what our next move will be, although I would suggest staying in here until help finds us. Agreed?
With no one taking exception, the group began shuffling around as they each tried to find somewhere soft to lie down amongst the various hard surfaces. Margaret headed off for the staff room to claim her sofa, while Dave claimed the tall back leather chair in the manager's office. Nick decided to roll up his coat as a pillow and just bed down on the restaurant floor. There would be nowhere else that was comfortable, so why waste time looking? Eve and Pauline did the same, lying down a few feet from him. The three prisoners huddled up in the corner of the restaurant, making a bed from some aprons they'd found hanging up on the kitchen wall. Carl and Cassie separated off to sleep in the kitchen. Nick wondered if the two of them had formed a relationship throughout the day's events, as they had become inseparable. Good for them. Glad something positive came out of today. Nick laid his head back on his rolled-up coat and stared up at the suspended ceiling hanging above them all. The lights in the building had now been switched off, and moonlight spilled in through the surrounding windows. If it wasn't for all the bloodshed, one might even have described the night as beautiful. Deanna would have found this romantic, bedding down on the floor under the moonlight.
I miss you.
He closed his eyes and listened to the silence for what seemed like hours, until finally the silence was replaced by the dozing snores of his companions. The last thing he heard before sleep claimed him too was a soft whimpering coming from Eve as she struggled with the unseen terrors of her dreams. Chapter 10. When Nick opened his eyes, he was back at home, standing in his kitchen. Deanna stood at the sink, washing dishes with her back to him. James lay on the cold tiles, staring up at the ceiling as if he was paralyzed.
James? What are you doing on the floor?
Nick stepped forward and looked down at his son. He tried to speak to him to tell him to get up, but no sound escaped his lips. When he pressed his fingers to his face, he realized that was because he had no lips. There was only coarse scar tissue where his mouth should have been.
Oh, God!
Deanna turned around to face Nick. Her face was mouthless, too. Her eyes were wet with blood, and crimson tears stained her cheeks. In her hand, she held a claw hammer. She offered it to him. For some reason, he could not stop himself from taking it. He held the heavy hammer in his hand and spun around as if he were suspended by invisible wires. He was powerless to take control of his own body as he took two strides across the kitchen floor and knelt beside his son's paralyzed body. James continued staring up at the ceiling, blinking occasionally, but never moving. Nick raised the hammer above his head. He stared into his son's eyes, then brought it down with all of his strength. It struck James right between the eyebrows, caving in part of his skull and filling his eye sockets with blood. Nick felt sick, horrified by what he had done. He raised the hammer again. This time he struck his son in the mouth, shattering his small teeth into tiny shards. James choked and spluttered as he struck with the hammer again, shattering his jaw completely and sending it sideways. Nick wanted to die, to stop existing, and escape the abominable fate of destroying his son's beautiful face. He raised the hammer again. Nick swung the hammer downwards again and again, spraying blood and bone fragments into the air and coating everything with gore as he split apart flesh and mashed up brain matter. By the time he was through, there was nothing left of James but a lumpy red residue on the grimy kitchen tiles. He had just killed his son. Again. And Nick knew that he would keep on doing the exact same thing every night when he closed his eyes. Sleep would never again come easy. In his dreams, he looked over at his wife pleadingly. This time, Deanna was facing him. She held a chef's knife in her hand. Again, Nick was powerless as he took it from her. When he turned back around, James's face was back to how it had been, untouched by the vicious blows of the hammer. Once again, innocent and beautiful. Nick knelt down and got back to work. He raised the knife. Nick's eyes snapped open. His breathing was wet and ragged, hurting his chest as it forced its way from his lungs. He was surrounded by darkness, not full black, but more of a floating gloom. When he saw the moon through the windows, he remembered where he was. He remembered everything.
Oh, God! James! Deanna! What the hell happened to my life? It just went away in the blink of an eye!
He sat up a little too quickly and thought he was going to throw up. The taste of cheap burger meat rose up and filled his gullet. Then he heard something and spotted that the lights were on in the kitchen area behind the counters. In the darkness, he could see the fuzzy shapes of Eve and Pauline sleeping nearby. Whoever was in the kitchen, it wasn't them. Then who? He rolled onto his knees and rose slowly to his feet. After what everybody had been through, he did not want to wake anybody up unjustly. The sounds continued. As he headed over to the gap in the service counter, it seemed like somebody was weeping.
What the hell? Is somebody crying?
Nick kept his footsteps slow and careful. He slid between the various cookers and countertops and tried not to make a sound. For some reason, he felt compelled to creep, to keep his approach clandestine. At the far end of the kitchen was an L-shaped corridor where the fridges were located. Peeking out from around that corner was a pair of legs. The feet sported heavy work boots that Nick thought he recognized.
I know whose boots those are.
Nick rounded the corner to see Carl lying face down on the floor. There was no blood, and it was not immediately apparent what had happened to him. He could even have been sleeping, but somehow Nick knew it wasn't true. He knew it for sure when he spotted Jan standing over Cassie while the girl cowered on the floor without her shirt. Jan's eyes immediately went wide when he noticed Nick's presence. He quickly put his hands up in submission, holding them high above his head.
"This isn't what it looks like, brother," he said. "You have no idea what this fucking looks like," Nick growled.
He looked down at Cassie, who was visibly stricken by whatever event had just transpired, and then shook his head in disgust.
"Cassie, it's okay. Come over here, to me."
For a second it looked like she might refuse, but then she clambered to her feet shakily and scuttled over to him. Nick placed her behind him. Jan stared Cassie hard in the eye as she cowered behind Nick.
"You remember what we spoke about, sweetheart, okay?"
"You don't talk to her," Nick said. "You don't say a word to her, you understand me?"
Jan shook his head.
"You got this all wrong, brother."
"The only thing I got wrong was letting a bunch of criminals tag along with us. Soon as the sun is up, you're gone. When the others hear about this, they're going to lynch you."
Jan laughed, his barrel chest heaving in and out.
"Who? You and Dave? Don't make me shit myself."
Nick shoved out at Jan angrily, but found himself swatted aside like a measly fly. The larger man punched him in the ribs and then shoved him aside with ease. Nick flopped to his knees, clutching his abdomen. His lungs felt like they might explode as he fought desperately to catch a breath. Jan strode forwards and shoved him backwards with a large right foot. He glared down at Nick as though he were a child.
"We'll talk about this in the morning," he said, "and we'll see who gets lynched."
Then the large man turned and walked away. As he did so, he looked Cassie in the eye again.
"You just keep quiet and things will sort themselves out, sweetheart. Trust me."
Nick managed to catch a strangled breath and roll onto his side. He shuddered in pain. Cassie came up beside him and helped him to his feet. Her shirt was rolled up on the floor, and she hastily picked it up and put it back on over her white satin bra. Then it was as if she had suddenly remembered that Carl was unconscious. She dropped to her knees beside him and patted his cheeks.
"Wake up," she pleaded.
Carl began to moan. His eyes fluttered open slowly.
"Oh, what happened? My head feels like a Skoda parked on it."
"I think you got struck from behind," Nick explained, "by Jan."
"Motherfuck."
"Don't worry about it for now," said Cassie in a soothing voice. "We can talk about it tomorrow. Let's just go and get some sleep." Together, they picked Carl up off the floor and started dragging him towards the restaurant. He was still pretty much out of it, but was gradually regaining his senses.
"What the hell happened?" Nick asked Cassie.
She shook her head.
"Nothing. Don't worry about it."
"Jesus, Cassie! Don't listen to what that son of a bitch told you. It's okay now, you're safe. You can tell me what happened." Cassie huffed as they got Carl down onto the floor beside the service counter.
"None of us is safe anymore. We're all screwed."
Nick didn't want to argue with the girl, and Cassie obviously didn't want to talk about what had happened, at least not right now. There was no point prodding her.
"Okay," he whispered to her. "Get some sleep, and we'll talk in the morning. Don't go wandering off anywhere, okay? Stay close."
Nick headed back towards his spot between Eve and Pauline. He looked around for Jan and the other prisoners as he went. The three of them were huddled together on the floor by the restaurant's exit doors. Jan seemed to be having a heated discussion with Dash, but both lowered their voices when they noticed Nick's presence.
"What are they talking about? Are they plotting something?"
Nick settled back onto his spot on the floor and took a deep breath. His breathing was still labored after the punch Jan had delivered to his ribs. The guy was big, huge, no doubt about it, and if it came down to violence, Nick wasn't confident what the outcome would be.
"Hey," said Eve in a whisper, "what's going on?"
"Nothing," he lied to her. "I'll tell you about it in the morning. Just make sure you and Pauline don't go anywhere in the night without letting me know first." Eve shuffled across the floor so that she was only inches away from him.
"Okay," she said. "Same goes for you. No sneaking off again without telling me first."
"Deal." Nick stared up at the ceiling and wondered what the morning would bring. Chapter 11. The alarm woke everyone. Nick leapt to his feet in an instant. His heart beat like the footsteps of 1,000 sprinters. He spun around on the spot, disorientated and confused.
"What's happening?" Eve cried out from the floor.
"I don't know. Something tripped the alarms." Nick grabbed his coat up off the floor and put it on quickly.
"But I thought Dash turned them off," said Pauline, hurrying to her feet along with Eve.
Nick looked over and saw that Dash, Jan and Renee were still huddled in the corner by the doors. They seemed just as confused as everybody else. But that didn't mean they knew nothing. He marched over to the prisoners and pointed his finger at them.
"Did you do this?"
Dash shook his head.
"Do what, man? Why would we set off the alarms?"
"I can't imagine why you do most of the things you do. Why is it going off again? I thought you disconnected it."
"Nah, man. I just smashed up the console and shut off the intruder alert. The alarm is still intact. I just cut the link between the broken window and the siren. It was an ancient piece of shit. Piece of cake."
Nick shook his head in despair.
"So what set it off again?"
Dave came storming out of the staff-only door, shouting and cursing.
"What's going on? Why is the alarm going off again? And why is all the power off?"
"There's your answer," Dash said to Nick. "If the power went out, then the security system probably went over to a battery system or something. It tripped the alarm all over again."
"So what do we do?" Nick demanded.
"Disconnect the battery power and the whole system will be dead."
"Well, we need to do it quickly before any infected people find their way to us."
"Nick!"
Eve tapped him on the shoulder.
"Not now, Eve." "Nick!"
He shot her an irritated glance.
"What?" "I think that ship might have sailed."
Nick spun around to see what she was talking about. It soon became very clear. Standing at the many windows of the cafe, peering in with their bloodshot, swollen eyes, were dozens and dozens of infected people. Carl shook his head frantically.
"We are screwed."
All at once, the infected mob burst in through the windows. Their bodies hit the ground clumsily, embedding themselves with shards of glass, but they got back to their feet quickly. It felt like the room was closing in.
"Everybody get out of here!"
Nick screamed at the top of his lungs.
"Run for it!"
Everybody bolted, but there was no way out of the restaurant. All the doors and windows were blocked by the infected, so they made instinctively for the only barrier they could find, the fast food service counter.
"Into the kitchen!" yelled Carl. "There's a fire exit at the back!"
The infected screeched as they gave chase, clambering up and over the counter in a flood of limbs. Nick and the others rounded the L-shaped corridor of the kitchen and wasted no time in gathering up against the fire exit that Carl had promised them was there. Jan leapt into the air and kicked the pushbar that crossed the door's center, and it flew open with a clatter. The air rushed in from outside. It was crisp and cold.
"Everyone outside," Dave ordered.
Jan stood in the doorway, holding it open and ushering everyone out. Nick waited whilst the women funneled through, ready to shoot out right after them. But it was then that he realized someone was missing.
"Shit," he said. "I have to go get Margaret. She'll still be in the staff room."
"Leave her," Dave said. "You've got no way to reach her."
Nick stood still, tempted to fight his way back through the kitchen and into the restaurant. But the infected were everywhere. In fact, they were rounding the corner right now and closing in on the fire exit. Jan grabbed a hold of Nick and pulled him through the doorway. Dave immediately slammed the door shut behind them. The infected mob clattered against the other side, beating at it furiously. It had been close, but they had all made it out, with only milliseconds to spare. Nick let his shoulders drop as he looked back at the locked door.
"Everyone except Margaret. We left the poor woman to die. I'm sorry."
Everyone was huddled at the back of the steep hill behind the cafe. They were currently hidden from the car park and from the lethal monsters that were loitering there.
"We have to go," said Dave, "before they realize that we're back here."
Nick shook his head.
"We can't just leave Margaret behind. She might still be alive in there."
Dave shrugged.
"You do whatever you have to, but the rest of us are getting out of here."
Eve gave Nick a pleading look.
"We have to get out of here before they find us. You can't help her."
"You go with everyone else," he told her. "I'll catch up with you."
Eve shook her head vigorously.
"No way! You have to come with us."
"I will. Just get going." She went to argue with him, but he didn't let her. "Just go."
Everyone clambered up the hill, struggling through the undergrowth and heading back towards the woods they'd arrived from yesterday. Nick watched them go, but was surprised to see that Jan was still standing there beside him.
"What the hell are you doing? Get out of here."
"I figured you could use a hand."
"I don't want your help."
"Well, maybe the old dear inside does. You selfish enough to turn me away when a woman's life is at stake."
Nick huffed. "Fine, let's just do this." He pressed his back against the building. There was no way inside the fire exit, but he knew that the staff room had a window. If he could find it, he might be able to get Margaret out. Jan followed Nick as he moved cautiously around the building. The keening pitch of the security alarm was deafening, which made it impossible to hear what was around the next corner.
"I could be walking right into a whole bunch of them."
He stopped at the edge of the building's rear wall and prepared himself to peek around the corner.
"Be careful," said Jan. "Those things see you and they come at you like heat-seeking missiles."
"I know, I've seen enough of them." Slowly, inch by inch, he leaned around the corner, searching for the nearest threat. He soon pulled his head back and cursed.
"Damn it!
There must be at least a dozen of them around there." Jan scratched his beard.
"I have an idea."
Nick sighed.
"What?"
Jan looked upwards at the building's roof.
"It's a single story. With a boost, I should be able to get up there, create a distraction for you."
"But then how do you get down again without them getting you?"
He shrugged.
"One thing at a time, brother. You in?"
Nick thought about it and then nodded.
"Okay, let's do it."
He threaded his fingers together and made a platform for Jan to step on, before hoisting the large man upwards.
"Jesus Christ, you weigh the same as an elephant!"
Jan dangled for a second and then heaved himself up in a finely executed pull-up. At the top, he straightened up and brushed the dust from his knees.
"Only two things to do in prison," he said, looking down at Nick from the roof. "Educate one's mind and exercise one's body. You ready? I'll try and get them to follow me around to the other end of the building, so that you can get the old dear free and clear."
Nick nodded, but kept a serious look on his face.
"You know we're still going to have that conversation about what happened to Cassie." "Looking forward to it," said Jan, as he raced off to the opposite side of the roof.
Nick waited and listened for the distraction.
"Come on, you stinking assholes! Come get it!"
Nick decided that was his cue. He peeked back around the corner to see that the infected gathered there had turned around and were now racing to the other side of the building. The coast was clear. He hurried around the next wall, peering inside each window as he passed. After looking into the kitchen and then into the manager's office, he found the window that led to the staff room. There was no sign of Margaret.
Damn it!
He tapped on the glass lightly.
Margaret? Margaret! Are you in there?
She appeared from her hiding place behind the room's sofa, and Nick sighed relief. She trotted up to the window and seemed glad to see him.
They're inside, she said to him through the glass. I can hear them.
I know. Just open the window and I'll get you out of here. The old lady was white as a sheet, but she did as she was told. She fiddled with the window latch and managed to get her gnarled fingertips beneath the window frame. She slid it upwards. Nick put his arms out to her.
Come on, let's get you out of here.
It was clearly a struggle for Margaret to get herself up and over the window ledge, but given the gravity of the situation, she managed to bundle herself over into his waiting arms. He set her down on the ground and examined her. She seemed okay. Jan continued to heckle the infected from the rooftop. The coast was still clear. Nick grabbed Margaret's arm and hurried her around to the back of the building. It was still clear of infected, although he could hear them banging on the fire escape from inside the kitchen. Not wanting to stick around, he headed for the woods at the base of the hill and slid between the trees. When they were sufficiently away from the cafe and the car park, Nick brought them both to a stop to catch their breath. Jan was still shouting and cajoling from the rooftops and keeping the danger contained to the front of the restaurant. Nick wasn't sure he would have gotten Margaret out without the prisoner's help, but after what Jan may have done to Cassie last night, he still considered just leaving him there to meet his fate. It would have been wrong, though. Jan had helped rescue Margaret. They owed him now. He placed a hand on Margaret's shoulder.
I need to find a way to get Jan off the roof in one piece. Can you wait here?
Of course. Just make sure you come back in one piece.
Nick patted her shoulder gently and then headed back through the trees. The building came back into view quickly. He could still see Jan standing on top of the roof, waving his meaty arms above his head and hollering at the baying mob below. Jan probably didn't even know that Nick and Margaret had gotten clear. With the alarm still wailing, Nick could think of no subtle way to get the other man's attention, so he just put two fingers in his mouth and wolf whistled. Luckily, Jan heard it and turned around. Nick crouched in the bushes and waved. Jan gave him a thumbs up,
along with a questioning look.
Nick gave him a thumbs up back to let him know that Margaret was safe.
Now we just have to find a way to get you down from there.
Jan shrugged and peered around the roof. The expression on his face was an obvious, now what? Nick had to admit to himself that he had no clue. Getting the man off the roof safely was not going to be easy. He crept forward out of the bushes and headed back to the rear of the building. He thought about climbing onto the roof and joining Jan up there, but there was no way he could make it up on his own. The only way he could help Jan get down was if he distracted the mob of infected people the same way Jan had for him.
But how do I do that and not die?
He headed around the side of the building back to the open staff room window. He checked to see that no infected people had found their way inside and then climbed through. The only weapon inside was an abandoned umbrella propped up beside a dusty television. It was not even worth taking. He would have to remain unarmed.
Great. Maybe I can box my way out of this.
The alarm was muffled from inside the staff room, and Nick could just about make out the shuffling of infected people in the corridor beyond. It was apparent that if he opened the door, he would be face to face with a whole bunch of them.
So what the hell do I do?
Suddenly, he had an idea. He looked up at the suspended ceiling.
Maybe if I can get up there.
Nick hopped up on the sofa and balanced on the backrest. From there, he was able to reach up and push against one of the ceiling tiles. It was made of fragile fiberboard and was light enough to push aside with just one hand. The tiles would not be strong enough to hold his weight, but the metal railings holding them in place might be.
Either that, or I'll fall to my death.
He leapt up and grabbed at one of the rails. It bent beneath his weight but held firm after a couple of inches. Kicking at the wall for leverage, he managed to clamber his way up into the ceiling space. Fortunately, the staff room and offices were made of cheap partition walls, and the space above allowed unrestricted access from one end of the building to the other. It was a struggle to move along the railings, and the exertion quickly made him huff and puff, but he kept going. Inch by inch, he shuffled through the crawl space. After several feet, he pulled aside a tile and peeked through the gap. In the corridor below were half a dozen infected people. They milled about like birds searching for insects, all twitchy movements and sudden flinches. They barely even resembled human beings anymore.
Maybe they really have become monsters.
Nick carefully replaced the ceiling tile and continued along the railings. He had to keep his face pointed downwards, chin to his chest, as age-old insulation and dust swirled around him, disturbed most likely for the first time in years.
If the infected don't get me, asbestos poisoning will.
He eventually stopped where he imagined the restaurant floor to be and carefully positioned himself astride two parallel rails. He pushed on them to test their strength. They groaned a little but kept their shape. Above him, Jan's muffled shouting continued to keep the infected herded together in one place. Nick took a deep breath and prepared himself for what he was about to do.
Here goes nothing.
He smashed his fist into one of the flimsy ceiling tiles and sent it plummeting to the floor. A couple of infected people directly below stared up at him and instantly let out one of their high-pitched screeches. Nick held his breath, terrified, but was glad to see that his plan was going as expected. He hung his head out of the hole, making sure he was easily visible to the rest of the infected below.
Hey! Come and get it, silly bollocks!
The screech of the infected brought others near. They funneled in from the corridors and kitchen areas, and even more started pouring in from outside, dragging themselves in through the broken windows. It wasn't long before the restaurant floor was packed shoulder to shoulder with infected. There was even one or two of the slower ones amongst them.
The ones that might be dead. Now's not the time to think about that.
Come on!
Nick shouted down at them.
Let's have you!
Infected people continued to pile in and fill the floor of the restaurant. They reached up at him futilely, like worshippers praising God. Eventually, he was satisfied that nearly all of them were gathered inside the building. Their collective screeching was so loud now that it was hard to hear the alarm siren.
Time to get out of here.
Nick pulled himself back up from the hole in the ceiling and swiveled around on the railings. Suddenly, he fell. The rail had bent and lowered by about 6 inches. Nick froze, closing his eyes and praying that the rail did not give any more. The sounds of the infected below him seemed to get even more ravenous as he hung perilously above them. After a few seconds had gone by, he slowly lifted his hand and grabbed the rail further along. Then he moved his knee. The railing groaned. Nick kept moving. He headed back the way he had come, being mindful to make as little noise as possible. His intention was for the infected to remain in the restaurant, looking up at the hole in the ceiling where they had last set eyes on him. He would escape the building through the staff room window without being spotted. He just had to be quick and quiet. And that's just what he did. He travelled back through the crawl space and dropped down onto the staff room's sofa. He wasted no time in hopping back through the open window and heading outside. As soon as his feet hit the ground, he turned around and shouted up to Jan on the roof.
Hey! The back of the building is clear! Can you get down?
After a few seconds, Jan appeared at the edge of the roof.
What's happening? He asked. They all went inside the restaurant.
I know, I lured them in. Get down from there quick and we can make a break for the trees and try to find the others.
Jan was visibly relieved, his chest losing a full inch as he let out a whistling breath. He crouched down and lowered himself onto the lip of the roof before letting himself go. He hit the ground with a thud, and Nick had to steady the man as he landed.
Come on, he said, yanking Jan towards the woods. Margaret is waiting for us.
The two of them raced into the trees, fighting to keep their speed as they headed up the growing incline of the hill.
Do you think the others will have waited?
Jan asked as they huffed and puffed.
I doubt it. In fact, Dave pretty much said that they wouldn't.
What's the smart thing to do, then? They could have gone in 100 different directions.
Nick stopped running and stamped his foot.
Damn it!
Jan looked worried.
What is it?
Margaret! I told her to wait for me. She was right here in this spot, I'm sure.
Calm down. I'm sure she's here somewhere.
Nick turned a circle, scanning the trees that surrounded them on all sides, but there was no sign of Margaret. His heart beat rapidly in his chest. Crack. A far-off snapping of twigs.
Do you hear that?
Nick set off towards the sound. Jan was right behind him. After passing through several yards of thick trees and thorny shrubs, a figure became visible in the distance. Nick spotted the coloured flash of their clothing. He and Jan picked up speed, aiming for the stranger up ahead. Nick almost tripped over a half-buried tangle of roots at one point, but Jan managed to reach out and keep him on his feet. Less than a minute later, they had caught up with the unidentified person.
Eve, he said, doubling over and wheezing once he knew it was her. What are you doing out here on your own?
I came back to find you. The others are going to move on if you're not back in 10 minutes.
Well, that was dumb of you, Nick admonished her.
He straightened back up and tried to control his breathing.
Where's the group now? Do they have Margaret?
Dave took everyone down to the bottom of the hill, by where we first found this place. And yes, Margaret found us. She's with them.
They should have gone up the hill, not down, Jan said. Less likely to be infected people up high, I reckon.
Eve shrugged. Dave said it would be a waste of energy climbing up the hill. He wanted to go back the way we came in. He said it was the only place we knew was safe.
Nick shrugged.
Whatever. Up, down, I don't care. Let's just catch up with them before they leave us high and dry.
Eve led the way, taking them horizontally across the hill, and then slightly downwards towards the bottom. The screeches and wails of the infected had stopped now, as the restaurant security alarm finally died out. Now the only sounds left were the pounding of their feet and the snapping of twigs and autumn leaves.
They're down here, said Eve, pointing.
At the bottom of the hill, Dave and the others were gathered in a tight bunch. Margaret waved at Nick as they approached.
Oh, thank heavens you're okay, she said.
Nick went and gave the old lady a quick hug. Dave had his arms folded impatiently.
We were just about to give up on you.
Thanks for waiting, Jan said.
What's the plan? We head back into the woods we started in. We know it's clear of infected because it was clear when we came through.
So was the car park, Carl remarked, but it certainly had a few visitors since then.
That was the alarm, Dave said. It brought them to us overnight. They obviously heard it from in the distance.
But Dash managed to turn the alarm off after only a couple of minutes, Eve said.
Dave shrugged.
They must have just headed for it when it was going off and carried on in that direction when it stopped. When they hear something, they must set off in that direction until they come across something else to distract them otherwise.
You mean someone to chow down on, said Dash.
He looked over at Jan.
What were you doing anyway, risking your life for this honky?
Let's just get out of here, said Jan. I'm not in the mood for being hunted by those things, and it's only a matter of time before one of them stumbles upon us.
Carl screamed. Nick stumbled backwards in shock as Carl crashed to the muddy ground. Someone had attacked him from behind and was now clinging to his back, arms wrapped around his neck.
Damn it!
Dave shouted.
It's that bitch!
Nick looked down and could not believe it. The attacker was Catherine. She was struggling with Carl on the ground and trying to sink her teeth into him. Her face was still swollen with the bruises Dave had inflicted on her, but her eyes were now bulbous white orbs leaking blood. Blood also poured from her mouth, so thickly it was like her insides were melting.
Help me! Carl cried out. Somebody get her off me!
His words were cut short. Catherine's teeth sunk deep into his throat. She ripped away his carotid artery and chewed on it like a length of sausage. Carl writhed in agony as he struggled to take a breath through a throat that was filling with fluid. A wailing screech from the group's right-hand side made them all spin around as one. Several meters away, coming towards them like an Olympic sprinter, was Jake.
They must have heard the alarms too, Nick shouted. It brought them in this direction.
Everybody, run!
Dave bellowed. No one needed convincing. They all sprinted back the other way towards the car park. When they burst back out of the tree line, hitting the unforgiving concrete, the group skidded to a halt. Several of the infected had now poured back out of the Rainforest Cafe and were outside again.
Jake's screeching had alerted them, and they were now staring toward the tree line with their swollen eyeballs.
"There's nowhere to run," Eve said as she shuffled up beside Nick. "We're surrounded."
Nick knew she was right. Jake and Catherine hunted them from the woods behind, while dozens of infected had started to fill up the car park ahead. He looked around desperately for an option.
"There," he pointed. "Head for the cable cars."
The group did as he said and sprinted across the car park. The infected outside the cafe spotted them immediately and filled the air with their collective screeching. Then they stampeded as one, clattering across the pavement like a pack of bloodthirsty wolves. With every step Nick and the others took towards the cable cars, the mob of infected got closer. Nick didn't know if they had any chance of making it, but the air was filled with the echoes of their hurried footfalls as he and the others ran as quickly as they could. They were running for their lives. They ran so fast that Nick worried his legs might fail at any second. None of them could quit, though. They had to keep running.
"Quickly!" he shouted. "Into the cars!"
On the raised cement platform, only two cable cars were accessible. All of the others were hanging at spaced intervals up the hill. The cars were too small to accommodate everyone individually, so the group were forced to split into two. Nick leapt into the nearest car, followed by Cassie and the three prisoners. Cassie seemed immediately uncomfortable in the presence of the men, but there was no time to comfort her. The rest of the group were lagging further behind, and barely managed to make their way inside the remaining cable car before the infected reached the platform. But they did make it.
"Are we safe?"
Nick pulled his car's sliding door shut and watched through the plastic windows as Dave did the same in his. Both groups were now inside a protective cocoon. But Nick realized something terrible. Looking across at the other cable car and then checking out the occupants of his own, he noticed that someone was missing. Margaret wasn't inside either car.
"No, no, no!"
Nick looked out at the car park and spotted the old woman stumbling across the pavement, too old to sprint as quickly as the rest of them. He made for the door, but Jan stopped him.
"You won't make it in time, brother. Her 9 lives are up."
"I have to get her! We only just saved her!"
But it was too late. The infected mob engulfed Margaret like a swarm of flesh-eating locusts. They pulled her arms at weird angles, snapping her fragile bones and sinking their teeth into her tissue paper skin. It took only seconds for the mob to strip her flesh like a pack of ravenous piranha, leaving nothing but a wet mess on the floor that stained the concrete like spilled red paint.
"Oh, Margaret."
The rest of the infected hit the cable cars hard, rocking them on their moorings and sending everyone inside against the steel walls like beans in a maraca.
"There's no way these cars are going to hold," Jan said.
"We be screwed, Honky," said Dash, glaring at Nick. "Good plan, Einstein."
The infected bashed their fists against the plastic windows, making them rattle and loosen in their frames. One of the infected, a large Asian man that reminded Nick of his co-worker Paul, got his fingers inside the sliding door and started to work it back and forth on its hinges. Nick looked across at the other cable car and saw that its occupants were equally as doomed. Eve stared across over at him with fear in her eyes. There were only moments left before the infected would get inside and pluck them all out like tasty pilchards from a can.
"We're totally screwed. There's nothing we can do."
Nick glanced around, taking in the sight of the infected up close from behind the windows. Their snarling expressions spoke of unbridled fury. It was as if rage had become their sole function. The infected were unable to do anything except kill. The only reason they lived was so that others would not.
"What will they do when there's no one left? Turn on each other?"
Nick took one last regretful look at Eve and began to wish that he had left her in the cupboard he had found her in. He had not rescued her. He had doomed her. She looked back at him, terrified, and seemed to be doing some last-chance reflection herself. Then she began to move. In fact,